Okay, today is Sunday. It's a day that used to be celebrated very big, where Yomo was born, and where I spent quite a few months of my life, Communist Russia. May 1st, 2022. I remember when I came back from Russia, I was all upset. There were parades here in Israel, yet today, 40 years later, it's gone. But God have mercy on us, and God have mercy on what's going on as we give shir in Russia and the Ukraine and elsewhere. All right, I want to say Chodesh Tov, everyone. I want to, ani rotzeh laodot laKadosh Baruch Hu that I'm back teaching. The news hasn't always been that good, but that's a function of age, unfortunately. I wish it would be calls telling me all my friends have bar mitzvahs and engagements and marriages, etc. But I guess at my age, already in my ninth decade of activity, it's a little bit different. And the model HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, now, I just want to, first of all, make a small correction. I thank Rabbi Krasansky. I mentioned Jonathan Sonner. I believe it could be in the other class. The Jewish historian, sociologist, as you wish, he lives near Brandeis. It's his brother who lives in Teaneck and was a member of Rabbi Krasansky's congregation. Jonathan identifies as Modern Orthodox like his brother. So I think I met Jonathan in Teaneck. It could be he was visiting his brother. It could be I'm confusing the two brothers. But my description is correct that they both identify with the modern Orthodox world. Now, in relation to Rabbi Freuer, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Freuer, whose memory I brought back to existence, I want to tell you that a Talmud listening, a Chabatnikim, Lavi Kazovsky, was distributing Shmura Matzah, Chabad Matzah before Pesach, and he was near Holyoke, and he decided to go to the cemetery. And I have to tell you, he photographed the kever of Rabbi Yehuda Leib Freuer and his wife, the ohel, the kever. And here's the picture of both. Let me see if I can get it right. I can't master this no matter what. Mark, can you let it be seen? That's the husband and wife. No, it doesn't pick up. All right, anyway.
Which camera?
That's the camera, but now I see. Okay. And he took pictures of the cemetery with the Lashon of the Matzevah, and I want to give it as a gift to Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener, who comes from Holyoke.
My parents are buried behind where the photographer was probably standing. My grandparents are...
Mark is saying his parents are buried behind where the photographer is standing, and his grandparents are buried in back. All right, so that takes care. You can thank Rabbi Kozovsky for the list. Now, the other thing I just want to respond to is my talk on BMT. Evidently, I got a lot of beautiful comments, and I thank everyone for their good words. And people asked me two questions. What was Tachnit Yud Gimel, and how did BMT close? And I can relate very quickly to the two questions. What happened was that because BMT began and there was such interest, so within the 2 years, 3 years of BMT beginning, by about 72, I would say, the Jewish agency came up with the idea that if we have the youngsters come for the final half of their senior year, maybe they'll stay in Israel. And at that point already, because the yeshivas were starting to attract American kids. So Tachnit Yud Gimel began very successfully, and from 72, 73, a number of youngsters, Taka stayed on, and Kerem Biavna. Kerem Biavna was then very big. Shalavim Tera, I think, has superseded it with the Americans. Hakotel, or Har Etzion, Alon Shvut, I should say. And what happened was, after the Yom Kippur War, everyone wanted to come to Israel. Why did everyone want to come to Israel? It may be psychological, that until the Yom Kippur War, everyone thought Israel would be here forever. After the Yom Kippur War, with the Yom Kippur War, they realized that who knows what's going to be. Moshe Dayan, Churban Bayit Shlishi, if you recall. So everyone came. When everyone came, it was not serious. In other words, these kids were finishing high school. They have no more exams left. I don't want to tell you what went on. I remember there were so many people come to Machon Gol. They divided the group into three. They had a lottery. And the third wound up in Machon Gol, Rehov HaTurim. A third wound up in Herzliya for Netanya, as I recall. And a third wound up in a program in Bayit Vagan. No, I need not tell you, the kids out in Netanya, Herzliya, I don't know if they were more in class or more at the beach. And within a year or two, they had to give up the Tachnit Yud Gimel because it simply was not serious. And it was not a problem as time marched on. Mashallah Yasah Sechel Yasah Hazman. Everyone came post-high school for that year. And some stayed. Many went back. But the percentage of Aliyah from these youngsters today, their grandparents, I would say it borders on 25 to 30%. Wherever I go in Israel, I meet graduates of BMT, graduates of Machon Gol, graduates of Machal, Ashrei Yayin Ra'atazot. Now, how did BMT come to an end? Very simple, and this is a living problem. The Reform and Conservative took over the Jewish Agency. Right now, as you know, they can't find a new head for the Jewish Agency. It has to be practically a unanimous vote, because a miracle happened and the more right-wing element led by the Young Israel and with the tacit agreement, I understand, of Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, they recognized that voting for the Jewish Agency, buying a shekel and declaring yourself a Zionist, doesn't mean you agree with all the ideology of Ben-Gurion. It only means you recognize Israel's a reality and we have to fight for Torah in Israel. And the more votes Torah gets in the Jewish Agency, it translates into more millions of dollars for Torah and Torah observance. So at that point, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, the Haredi world did not vote. And the many conservative synagogues made it part of your membership that they paid whatever it was, $5, $6, $7 for the shekel, giving you the right to vote in the Jewish Agency elections for the World Zionist Organization. And once they took over the agency, they got rid of the Torah Culture Department. It's an affront to them. What? They're not Torah. They're not culture. They can't eat chametz on Pesach. You understand? It's Rakefet is a fanatic. His Judaism is not Judaism. Judaism is liberality, freedom of choice, democracy, etc. So they made another point, which is not incorrect, that by the 1980s, the late 80s, there were so many private institutions rivaling BMT and Gold, that why must the Jewish Agency continue to carry a budget of hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, and run schools, let it go private? And that's exactly what happened. I can tell you, honestly, I'm a loyal person. I grew up a 20-minute walk from Yankel Stadium. And until today, I'm rejoicing. The Yankels are having a big winning streak. I'm sure anyone who's still got American blood in them knows what I'm talking about. And that's it. I'm a loyal Yankee fan. It's ingrained within your blood from your youth. And I love YU. I've been offered twice. I was offered twice my salary here. A very important person. I don't care what you're making. Two times, you show me what you get per month, we'll double it. I can't believe why you, I'm a law person. I figured I would be in BMT to the end of my life. They would carry me out, lower lane. I don't want to be carried out tomorrow. Take my word for it. I've got to teach it. Give me another 120 years. But I was loyal. And suddenly in the late 80s, they make an offer if you resign, because we had tenure and they're going to give us a whole deal. And I went to Rabbi Hurwitz, I went to Whitey, and I figured he'll tell me, no, you got to remain, we have to keep it going. Whitey said, grab it. At that moment, I realized the end is in sight. And a few years later, BMT Gold closed completely. They were given over to private hands who ran it for 2 or 3 years, but it couldn't succeed in private hands. It just didn't begin as a private institution, and there were too many pitfalls in changing it into a private institution, and they became part of history, so that one day Rakefet should be Mekayim Tchiyat HaMetim and bring them back to life. So that's the story with BMT Gold. Now, one other factor that I won't handle today, I'll handle tomorrow. I received a very big letter criticizing me, ripping me apart, quoting from Rakefet and stabbing him with his own quotes, as if I hold that Reform and Conservative Jews shouldn't be allowed near the Kotel. I'll respond to that tomorrow, b'tuv tam v'dat, b'ezrat hanotein liyov koach. Now let's get back here, and it's a very, we're coming into very fascinating material. And I hate to say it, halacha l'maisa, what do we do? Where do we turn? I'll show you today, next week, the machlokes, Menashe Klein with Moshe Feinstein. And it comes right down to the headlines. I was at my podiatrist the other day. And, you know, people know me. I walk out of his office, Rakefet, and right away they want to know what, and these are very important people and very learned people. What's your opinion on Kahana? And I thought they meant Meir Kahana. No, they meant Kahana with the Geirut, with everything going on now, with America, with the letter of the RCA Rabbanim, 3 out of 6, my own wonderful Talmidim. And these problems are right with us, halacha l'maisa. Now, what we're dealing with, I want to finish up, and I want to give you some interesting sources. The question of a Kohen L'Gioret. And you saw Reb Moshe refused to look at the Melamed L'Hoyel. He's not the only one. Let me cite to you something that came out recently. And I thank my dear student, Dr. Alan Blau, sent me a printout. His father just published in Chakira. This is by Robert Blau. Those of you familiar with Chakira and Rabbi Robert Blau, we're dealing with an early Talmud of the Rav. He should live and be well. He's no youngster today. I'm sure Vic knows him from Borough Park. He may very well daven in your brother's shul. I don't know if he can still go to shul, but assuming he can, could very well be he davens in your brother's shul in Borough Park. And Chakira now is publishing from his notes lectures that the Rav gave in Bernard Reville Graduate School many lifetimes ago. Now, I'm quoting from Chakira, volume 30, yes, volume 30. I'm quoting on page 66. For me, I'm verbatim, for me, what happened after the lecture was as interesting as the lecture itself. Some attendees would present the Rav with their personal problems, which she, with great ingenuity, would tackle in search of a viable solution. Others would simply come by to greet him. For example, on one occasion, Rabbi Charles B. Chevelle, noted rabbi who published the first scholarly edition of Ramban's biblical commentary, approached the Rav, who greeted him warmly and said, quote, Rabbi Chevelle, we all have to thank you for bringing the Ramban back to life, end quote. On another occasion, a young man in great distress told the Rav that he was engaged to be married, but was informed that this was a forbidden union, since she was a Kohen and she a divorcee. That is correct, said the Rav. But Rabbi, pleaded the young man, that is not fair. The Rav replied sympathetically, quote, "I agree, but much in life is not fair. A fact you already know or will experience during the course of your lifetime." And I need not say that's a totally accurate quote. That's the Rav. No ifs, ands, or buts. If that isn't enough, I quote from another volume, which I hope is well received. The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, by a guy named Rakefetesh Rothkopf, Volume 2, page 35. And here, I'm quoting the Rav in a lecture he gave to the YU Rabbinic Alumni, June 19th, 1975. And I'm quoting the Rav word by word. His lecture was in English. I'm not translating. This is the Rav word by word. "The Torah summons the Jew to live heroically. We cannot allow a married woman, no matter how tragic the case is, to remarry without a divorce. We cannot allow a Kohen to marry a Giyoret. Sometimes these cases are very tragic. I know this from my own personal experience. I had a case in Rochester of a Gentile girl who became a Giyoret HaTzedek before she met the boy. She did not join our nation because she wanted to marry somebody. Then she met a Jewish boy who came from an alienated background. See, someone born in Russia helped me. An alienated background and had absolutely no knowledge of Yahadut. She brought him close to Yahadut and they became engaged. Since he was now close to Yahadut, the boy wanted to find out about his family. So he visited the cemetery where his grandfather was buried. He saw a strange symbol on the tombstone. 10 fingers with thumbs and forefingers nearly forming a triangle. So he began to ask. He thought it was a mystical symbol. And he discovered that he was a Kohen. What can we do? This is the halacha. A Kohen may not marry a convert. We surrender to the will of the Almighty. On the other hand, to say that the halacha is not sensitive to problems and not responsive to the needs of people is an outright falsehood. The halacha is responsive to the needs of both the community and the individual. However, the halacha has its own orbit, moves at a certain definitive speed, has its own pattern of responding to a challenge and possesses its own criteria and principles." And the Rav goes on and he speaks about Rav Chaim, that Rav Chaim was a Mekil, but when you reach the boundary line, all you can say is, quote, "I surrender to the will of the Almighty," end quote. "With sadness in my heart, I shared in the suffering of the poor woman or the poor girl. She was instrumental in bringing him back to the fold, and then she had to lose him. She lost him. She walked away." I need not tell you that's a very powerful description. It's been quoted and requoted. I would even venture a guess that of all the times the Rav was quoted, that particular passage was quoted more than any other passage. And this is what halacha is about. If you believe in God and believe in Matan Torah, then there's a halachic system. We have rules and regulations. Yes, it moves in its own orbit. And there are times we can be mekil. There are times when we put together snifim, lahakel, sveik sveika, treirube, all the lectures I've given in the last 40 years in the kollel on the Sunday class. But nevertheless, there are times where you reach the wall, the boundary, and you just have to bow to the halacha. And that's the Rav. I have to tell you that Rav Moshe, the Rav, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe, exactly the same thought. In one of the gifts that they give out at a wedding today, they call it a teshuvah. So I believe this was the Drizin family. They produce all the letters they had from the Rebbe on a personal level. And in one letter, they asked the Rebbe about a Kohen and a Giyoret. And the Rebbe answers in his handwriting here, and he says, it can't possibly be permitted. Afilu b'yimtit gayeh harei giyoret asulet ha-kohen, u'be'im einu mekabelet zeh chaseh b'kabalat ha-mitzvot shela, shehu mitnai geirut kahalacha v'chulam. And that's exactly rephrasing the Rav, rephrasing Reb Moshe, 100%, the Rebbe is in total agreement.
When Rebbe is saying chaser, does that mean that her...
Right, because it's understood. It's exactly what Reb Moshe said. The Gemara, when Reb Moshe referred to the Gemara Baruchat Taflamin, that if you're converting to marry a Kohen, ipso facto, you're saying, I'm not accepting all the Torah. Okay, that's exactly the problem. Now, I have to tell you, this brought back a memory that I had long forgotten. And once again, I go back in time. I had some very sad introductions to the American rabbinate and the Agudas HaRabbanim, the Elder Rabbanim, the Elder Rabbis, the Europäische Rabbanim. You all know the story of Philadelphia in 1961. I get a call, I don't want to mention the name, of I taught members of the family, a very prominent rabbinic family, and Harav Rotka, Fichabfaycha, Hechsha, have a Hechsha for you, a bakery, Machalo Sabbos. So I asked the Rav, and he told me, you can't give a Hechsha to a bakery, Machalo Sabbos. The most you could do is look at the ingredients and tell people the ingredients is kosher. But even that wasn't, when I looked around, I saw already the milkshakes with the parava. It was just not right. So I asked him, why do you want to give me the hechsher? Why can't you keep it? So he says, well, I might be going into the slaughterhouse, and people will say I'm giving a hechsher to a bakery versus Machal Shabbos. So I said, well, if you can't do it, how can I do it? And that was one introduction. A second incident that happened was a very famous rabbi of the Briska Shul in Newark, a Europäische Rav. So I went to visit him on his deathbed. I was already in Newark a few years, in Maplewood, Sussex County, Newark. And I had a nice relationship with this rabbi. And I went to visit him, and here's a man about to die, and he says, Harav Rotkov, ich bet ein Sach, soll die Eibishtar helfen, als Amerika soll euch nicht Mekalekanam machen, wie das hat zu mir getan. Translation. I have one prayer. America shouldn't destroy you spiritually like it did me. And this was a Europäische Rav. A few weeks later at his funeral, which I can never forget, the whole mafia showed up. All of Yiddishkeit from Newark, the mafia, the FBI was at the door taking pictures of everyone entering the funeral chapel, Aptus, on Springfield Avenue. And remember Rabbi Siegel of Jersey City eulogized him, and he said, Mim, you can try him in him a fila with $1 million, that you could trust him even with $1 million. I only hope that no one will say that about me as my greatest praise, that you can trust me with $1 million. Praise. He lived Torah, he learned Torah, he loved Torah, he espoused Torah, he propagated Torah. $1 million, okay, everyone in Israel is a millionaire. I'll admit, I'm a millionaire. I own an apartment in Jerusalem. I'm a millionaire, no two ways about it. Okay, and then, so that was my second introduction. The third one I totally forgot about, and when doing my research, boy, did I cry. As you know, from 62 to 69, it was a Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva Shabbos Chol Hanan, YU, And I was in the building in Orthodox Shul in Maplewood, South Orange. I come home from yeshiva, it must have been 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and my wife says, you got a strange call, a Mrs. Polhemus. I remember the name until today. Polhemous, Mrs. Polhemus called. Please call her back. I call her back and she tells me, I hear right away, it's a WASP, it's a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant lady living in Maplewood, South Orange, well off, and her daughter is marrying a Jewish boy and they want an Orthodox wedding. So I said, let the young man call me, and I ask him who converted her, who's being Masada Kedushin. They want to use my shul. So I find out it's a Rav in Brooklyn, everything good. I check it out, a member of the Agudas HaRabbanim, and I tell my president, Sai Adaman, I say to Sai, Sai, let them use the shul, it'll bring in a little income. The Rav, I'm not going to be there, it's nothing to do with me, but I checked it out, it's an elder Rav from Brooklyn, it's going to come, Lesadeh Kedushin. A few days later, I get a call from the Rav in Brooklyn. Boy, I wish this was not true, but what can I tell you? I can't make it up. And he says, Rav Rotkov, tut me a teve, you can't miss out the Kedushin sein for the younger couple. And he gives me the, can you be miss out a Kedushin for this young couple? And I say, wait a minute, you converted the lady, I don't know them. Was darf ich Mesadik? Du kannst kommen in Mesadik Tushin sein. Azemi abgemacht, this is what we arranged. Everything was arranged like this. So he says to me, yes, I started, I'll say it in English, I'm living it in Yiddish. I started to prepare the ktuvah, it's a kohen to a convert. So I said to him, a kohen to a convert? How did you convert her? How come you didn't check? And how do you think I can be Masada Kedushin? He says, no, du bist from Yeshiva University. Dort nis min mehr Meikil. There more Meikil. This is what he said to me. And boy, you don't know how bad I felt. And it doesn't end there. They went, I closed the shul. I felt like an idiot. I had to close the shul to them. They went to a conservative rabbi, I don't want to mention his name, Jack knows the name, Jack Levinstein knows who I'm talking about. And under the chuppah, he said publicly, Dr. Rothkopf is very cruel. He wouldn't allow this, you know, the conservative stabbed me with a knife. He's right, it is very cruel. Go and explain to the average assimilating American Jew how a Cohen can't marry a girl. Under the chuppah, he said it. So I said that in class many years later. And lo and behold, Jack Levinstein picks up this conservative rabbi's son who's at Tzadik Yesod Olam with a beard, with his tzitzits out, living and teaching in the Be'er Sheva University. And he was upset with me. He said, my father couldn't have said it. You understand, my father was, you know, like he denied the whole story could have happened. But I'm giving you the facts. My dear students, halacha l'maisa, this question haunts us. On the other hand, you have Helen Zeidman, you have the Melamed Lahoyel. And I come back to something I told you many times over the last 20, 30 years. I had this case with a dear student of mine from the early years of BMT. And this kid, young man, came from a home. I yet got to know his parents, Sadikim Yesodei Olam. And his father was Shomer Shabbos, raised in Canada. I think he was a third-generation Canadian. You know what it meant to remain a Shomer Shabbos in Canada and Kohen and proud that he's a Kohen. And his kid marries a Michlala girl. I may have even been a student of mine, I don't remember, and a Canadian girl. And the marriage didn't work out. She was very brilliant, you know. Brilliant people have to know how to walk a straight path too. Brilliance isn't everything in life. Believe me, when you're brilliant, there are real problems. Brilliant, Gaon she Gaon, at times is very narrow. All right, I don't want to elaborate, let it stand at that. They got divorced. He later meets a lady, Baptist, and she converted, became a tzaddiket. Well, the family didn't know what to do, and by that time there was relatives living in Israel, big Haredi influence, and I told them, look, he quoted to you the Malamed Lahoyel. Once he knows the Malamed Lahoyel, you're not going to get him to walk away, to divorce. No, they didn't listen. I said, keep the connection open. There's a lachatchila and a bidyavid. You're reading me? There's a malamed lahoyel. I mean, whether the Rav never looked at it and Rav Moshe never looked at it, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe may or may not have looked at it, but the malamed lahoyel exists. The Rambam exists. I showed this to you a month and a half ago. So I want you to know, 2 more years went by, they consulted the Rav El Yashiv, and it was like Rav El Yashiv heard exactly what I said. You follow? It's exactly what I said 2 years earlier. But it hurts because many years have gone by, and I know that the person who married the Gioret, I know he's remained the Shema Torah mitzvah. She became a tzaddiket. I heard this from other people, and I don't know what the relationship is with the family. But here you're caught in a quagmire, and it's a great human tragedy. And ein hachinami lachatchila, whenever a question like this comes up, I will always say there's no solution. If b'dieved already someone is married and their children, and you saw the case that Reb Menashe Klein had, that the kids are learning, and one of the kids is going to become a Rosh Yeshiva, who knows, a Gadol b'Yisrael. All right. Damage control. And in Queens, that Shaila came up, in Riverdale it came up. I know the rabbis involved. I can mention the name, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld. And he takas saw they're going to get together again. Remember I told you the story, I taught the children, 2 were Kohanim and 2 were Halalim, 4 boys. The mother-in-law died, they remarried. So he told them not to remarry halachically. Civilly, go to mikvah, everything right, and samach on the melamed lahoyel. Okay, that's halacha lemaisa. These cases come up. There are many variations. Is he a Kohen? Isn't she a Kohen? Reb Moshe, how does she know? Reb Ruben Feinstein, she went to college, university. I need not tell you in the 21st century, living in a world where there's no God, basically. God has been kicked out of America. God has been kicked out of Europe. Shem Yerachem, the Arabs stand, if you read what's going on with the population problems, there's no workers. They're running after the Ukrainians. Halavai, come to us. Come here. Come there. We need workers. This problem repeats itself 100 times over. It is true that the fact that sex today is not sex anymore. When I was growing up, sex was something enigmatic, secretive. Sex, the basis of marriage, man, woman, strangers, one flesh, all this doesn't exist today. Sex is no different than a steak. You buy a steak in this store, you have sex in this store, etc., etc. So this works to our advantage, because Rabbi Reuben Feinstein is absolutely correct. If a lady goes to college and is not from, chances are she slept with a Gentile. The minute she sleeps with a Gentile, she has a hakoishim zayna. And the whole problem of halalim, the children already don't have kedushat kahuna, and the problem ameliorates itself. Okay, halacha lemaisa, Hashem yirachem aleinu. It's a reflection of modern life, modern assimilation, modern intermarriage, and what so many people call the silent holocaust. Okay. Now, I want to go one step further, come into a new area, and I want to come back to Hilchot Geirim, and I want to show you the heart of a halachic problem that once again haunts us, Reb Moshe, Reb Menashe Klein, tremendous controversy. But let's look at the halacha. I quoted this before, but now I'm quoting a different sifkatan. Yoredeya hilchat gerim siman reish samach chet sifkatan zayin. And this deals with a little kid.
Sifkatan
zayin. Sif zayin. Mark is right. Sifkatan is the nosei kelim. Oved kachabim katan. In yesh loav, this deals, look, in order to convert, you have to have knowledge, you have to know what you're doing. If you're born a Jew, you have a Brit. There was just a Brit Milah in Ephrata. I don't know if you saw it on the websites, but the great-grandfather was the Sandik, 90 years old, a survivor of many concentration camps, and they worked out the Brit to be exactly at the time of the siren. It's very moving. What was the siren? 11 o'clock? 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock. Right, 10 o'clock. So during the Brit, Mamish, during the Mila Priya and the Mitzitza, the siren is going off and the Mull is doing it, and the father, the great-grandfather said, this is my Nakama from Hitler. So a kid, no one asked me, if we want a Brit Milah. But we're born Jewish, you do a Brit Milah, fine. Someone who's not Jewish, you have a little kid, he has no knowledge yet. How can you convert him? What are you doing to him? Who asked you to convert him? Who asked you to touch him? Well, you're bringing him to Yiddishkeit. Is it a favor? Is it not a favor? So the halacha is, if parents are there, they father can take him, and you look into the shach sifkatan tetzayin mashma midaito the kamashmal and the alpha kip the ain lo dat shomim lo the schut lo the zachin li adam shalo befanav, and the kid doesn't have a dot. But his father is there, and the father has the right to say, convert my son, it's good for him. And that's the halacha. V'im ein lo avu bo lehitkayer, o imo mevia oto lehitkayer, beitin megarin oto, shreschut lo v'zachin li adam shalo Bafanav. Wow. And take a look that this kid comes on his own. How does it happen? There are miracles in life. I know, I can tell you a story. I used to daven Mincha Marav in the Shtiblach quite often when my daughter lives nearby, and when some of her children were not yet married, I'd go over and go with my grandsons to daven. Now I daven, all are married, no one's home anymore, and I daven up the steps in Ol Aaron, if you know what I'm talking about. It's the closest shul to my house. But when I would go to the Shtiblach, I noticed one time there's an Afro-American davening there. An Afro-American is not an Ethiopian, it's not a Yemenite. This is an Afro-American, his English, his attitude. So I asked, then he disappears. I don't see him. I asked around, they told me, yeah, he had come in Aliyah, and he was living in Katamon, and now he moved, I think, to Bethel or Shiloh, one of the fabulous Torah settlements in Yehuda V'Shomron, and that's why you don't see him. And I said, well, what's his story? So they told me the story. This kid is something you don't know, but something I remember. Every shul in my youth had a little apartment downstairs. And a caretaker lived there, took care of the shul, turned on the lights, took care of the heat. And this Afro-American family lived in the shul downstairs for decades. They took care of everything. Good people, wonderful people. And this kid says to his father, that, you know, Daddy, the Jewish people, the nicest people in the world, I want to be a Jew. So the father says, go talk with the rabbi. talks with the rabbi, and lo and behold, there was not much to teach the kid. He knew what Daf Torah was, he knew what Lane is on Shabbos, he knew he had daven three times a day. There wasn't much to teach him. And the kid converted and became married a frum girl, and Kanayin Hara, who knows how many children they have, the Kabbat of the Tiferet. So a kid wants to convert, or the mother brings him, and the Rabbanim look at him, and you know something? They convert him. They convert him. Why do they convert him? Sheshchutu lo v'zachen li'adam shelo b'fanav. It's right in Sif Zayin. And wow. Now, so this is very fascinating. A schut. So number one, what does a schut mean? And here I can tell you, I heard this from Boston, the Rav never got involved in conversions in America. He, you know, he saw the average person comes to convert, it's to marry, he doesn't mean it, he'll be like every other Jew. So there was a Talmud of the Rav whose wife couldn't have children. And they converted. They got a child for adoption who was not Jewish. And the Rav converted the child. The Rav said, here I know you're going to raise the kid with Torah. It's really a real schut for the kid to be a Jew. He quoted the Shulchan Aruch. He converted the kid. Now, what do you do if parents come and say, here you have in Israel a mother has a kid, they've come in Aliyah from the Ukraine, they've come in Aliyah from Russia, convert the kid. The mother doesn't keep kosher. The kid is not going to go to a religious school. This is part of the mark, this is part of the very problem we're living right now. Do you convert the kid? Is it a schut? Isn't it a schut? What do you mean a schut? What do you mean a schut? I'm a Jew. I have to observe Shabbos. I have to observe Kashrut. I have to observe Tarat Mishpacha. No? Take the non-Jews. Some of them are wonderful people without Kashrut, without Shabbat, without Tarat Mishpacha. But when a Jew doesn't observe, wow. Chatati, aviti, pashati. You got a whole list of sins. A guy, imagine, did you ever see a guy on Yom Kippur, al chetsha chatati lefanecha. What do you want out of a guy? He's a good person. He observes the Sheva Mitzvah. It's the finest person in the world. What do we want out of him? What do we want? And a Jew? Is it a schut? Isn't it a schut? To carry this responsibility, to throw it at a kid, Tayak Mitzvah, Kedusha Vitara, that in this world where everything goes, you suddenly Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha. Fascinating. And all right, if the parents are frum, as the Rav said, you're going to send the kid to Maimonides, you're going to educate the kid, the kid is going to grow up in a house that's steeped in Torah and Yirat Shemayim, fine. What kind of schut is it for a kid from the Ukraine whose mother's only knowledge of Yiddishkeit is that you eat matzah in addition to bread on Pesach? All right. Now let me tell you something else. And I had halacha lemaisa. Tell you something else. And they look into Sif Zion. After the conversion, Bein katan shigerav rav, Bein shigerav beitin, Yacholim mchot mishi yigdal, the ain dono ki Yisrael muma ela ka oved kachavan. We don't force anyone to be Jewish. Yomo's friend from the Ukraine, his parents converted him when he was 8 years old. The minute he turned 30, you have to take that kid and say to him,
13.
Thank you for being awake and correcting me. The minute the kid turns 13, you have to say to him, you now have absolute freedom of choice. Do you remain Jewish? Or do you want to be a Cossack, a Tatar? Like everyone else you saw growing up. And the kid has perfect choice. This is halacha 100%. Now, if he does observe something, then he can't change. In other words, look at Sifchet. Once he observes, he can't throw it away afterwards. It's sort of bebechinat kimu vekiblu mashekiblu kva. But if he's 13, hasn't done anything, perfect free choice. Now let me tell you a story, halacha lemaisa. Again, I'm not mentioning a name, although there's nothing embarrassing here. This is a lady that I stand in awe of. One of the most efficient, wonderful, sweetest people I ever met in my life. And she had a very responsible position for one of our main organizations of Torah in America. And we met her parents. And my wife right away said, there's something strange there. Her mother. Turned out that her mother was not born Jewish. Only much later in life, she became frum, her husband became totally frum. She converted, the girl converted. But now, for the first time, she found out she's not born Jewish. And the Rabbanim, where she worked, told her, you have freedom of choice. It's not just when you turn 12. She found out she was maybe 20. At that moment, she can say, that's it. I'm not interested. Who needs these restrictions? In her case, she said to me, Rebbe, I love Torah, I love Yiddishkeit, I've grown up in it. I continue, 100%. You should know that she came in Aliyah with her family, with her children, lives in a city that was under rocket attack in 2014. Mamish, a city that was under rocket attack daily, she moved in. Baruch Hashem, Lekavod L'Tiferet until today. But you see, this is the halacha. You can't force a child to become a Jew. Can you convert him? Yes. Schut lo. It's a schut. His father brought him. His father converted him. The Beit Din converted him. The kid came on his own. His mother converted him. Kid turns 12, 13. Make your decision. This is the halacha. Halacha is black and white, no problem, but life. Life creates the problems. Now, here I want to do the Mishnah halacha first. Reb Moshe has this very shaila, and the shaila Reb Moshe has is typical America. Nowadays, it's typical Ukrainian or Russian as well. And I will come to Reb Moshe in detail, but just I want to give you the background because Reb Menashe Klein refers to it. What do I mean, the background? Very simple. Yomo goes on Shlichut from the state of Israel. You're aware the Mizrahi, the Jewish agency today, they're working very hard to find young couples to go on Shlichut. Jews over the world have to be influenced. And if we don't do it, no one is going to do it. I have to say, this is the Rakefet plan. I said this 40 years ago and 30 years ago when people said to me, but I want to be a rabbi and save America. You want to be a rabbi, you come here, you save Israel. And Israel will send rabbis to America. And then you can really accomplish, because you're not Toluy in the Balabatim. It's not that they're going to pay your salary. The Jewish agency arranges, you're there 3 years, you get a salary, you teach Torah properly, you don't worry about tomorrow. It's the Rakefet plan, and I have to say, I've lived to see it come about. I give Rabbi Daron Peretz all the credit in the world. Samachti ba'omrim li. So they send Yomo to Nashville, Tennessee, to the day school. All right. Yomo snoops around. He uncovers 18 kids in the day school who are not Jewish. Father is Jewish. Mother is not. What are they doing in the day school? Very simple. You know how many Russian kids in New York wound up in Be'er HaGola because they were frightened stiff of the public school system with the drugs? Right or wrong? Right or wrong?
I don't know.
You know, and I know.
I don't know anyone who was non-Jewish in Be'er HaGola when I was there.
Say them. How many kids wound up in yeshiva? They might have done a conversion when the time you knew them, but why do kids like this go to yeshiva? They're frightened of the drugs, the sex, the, you know, there's no, kids don't go on. How many high school graduates go on to college and university if they're not Jewish and accomplished and use their minds? Look what's going on in New York today. Look what's going on in Los Angeles. So the kids wound up in day school. Now what do you do with these kids? Do you convert them? The mother's not from. She doesn't mind. Convert the kids. She says, I want them to grow up Jewish. This problem haunts us. There's a sideshow to the problem. Tell me, did you hear my lectures on the Holocaust? What was it, 30 years ago or so? I spent 5 years. Fabulous lectures. Knew what was one of the problems I had to deal with. Can you teach a guy Torah? They wound up having lectures in synagogues with the only place Jews could meet. And some of these synagogues had to run public lectures, and Gentiles showed up. Ohavei Yisrael, good Gentiles. Can you teach Torah? Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg has a tremendous tshuva. Mark, yeah, you're a rabbi doctor, you're teaching, they want you at a university, give some lectures on Torah and the penal system. Your specialty. How are you allowed to cite the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Kippah and Hilchot Sanhedrin and oh my gosh, and Hilchot Eidot. Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, Zeichet Tzadik Levecha, his famous article on self-incrimination, quoted by the Supreme Court, published in Tradition. How are you allowed to send Tradition to Gentiles? No? And Kol HaOsek B'Torah Chayav Mita, Gemara Sanhedrin, Goyim. No? Yomo's now teaching in the day school in Nashville, Tennessee. 18 kids are non-Jews. Yomo's teaching Bereshit Bara Elokim. He's teaching the Reish Rashi. The older kids, he's teaching the Ramban. How are you allowed to teach these kids? Mark, you never thought of these problems.
Oh, I've thought about them.
You thought about them. Right, these are real problems. Yomo, relax. What's your problem?
Miller had that problem when he was teaching in Bereshit.
Oh, Rab Miller, Rab David Miller had the problem teaching in Be'er Sheva, okay.
So he got upset that he should only teach Sheva Ben or something.
Believe me, in the day school in Nashville, Tennessee, they're not going to teach Sheva Ben, they're going to teach Bereshit, Bara, Shemot, you got to teach, they want to know, Mishnayot, etc. Listen, we can go on and on. And what do you do with Professor William Albright and Johns Hopkins? They used to say when an Israel boy had a shiler in learning, he either went to Jacob Agus, the Reconstructionist rabbi, Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Revel and Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, or he went to Professor Albright, who was Bucky in Shas. These are very interesting problems. Say that there are solutions, but the problem is real. Okay. So with that background, let's begin. The Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Tet Zion, Siman Kuf Chav Tet. I repeat, Jack, confirm it. Chelik Tet Zion, Siman Kuf Chav Tet. Tshuva is written 2002. I checked exactly to correspond to the Hebrew date at the end of 2002. And it's written to someone named Yosef Zilber in the Kamenetz Kollel in New York. All right? Again, it begins with the usual Haredi fear. He says, please forgive me if I didn't give you enough titles and enough respect. I don't know you personally, and therefore, vayan vayoma salachti. All right, I we see this time and again. I don't know, I grew up in a world where titles, lehefech, I still remember, I told you, the Rav yelling at Jerry Blau. Jerry is saying he had come back from Kerem Biavna, and he's speaking, you know, like an Israeli. The Rav said, he said, who do you mean the Rav? And he says, Rebbe, I mean you, so say you. You said, the Rav couldn't handle that third person yeshiva style. So, all right, and after excusing himself that he didn't know who he is, didn't have the right titles, he says, you tell me about the case, a Jewish man and his wife, they're not Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, and they just adopted a non-Jewish girl. And this man said to you, he knows that you're religious, and he confided in you, I know that I have to convert the child. So the young Joe Silber is asking Rabbi Menashe Klein, what should I do now? He wants to convert the child. He evidently confided in me, he wants guidance. Should I tell him, go to a proper Rav, go to a Talmud Chacham, Shomer Torah Mitzvah, a Rav who really is observant, and let him do the conversion. And that way we'll know that the conversion was done properly and the child is really Jewish. Or maybe, how can I send him to a Rav to convert the child? The parents are not frum. What type of frum type will the kid have? Shevi al ta'asa. I shouldn't do anything. But if I don't do anything, they'll certainly go to a reform rabbi, velotia hagerut klum, and the gerut will not be anything. On the other hand, maybe it's good if they go to a reform rabbi. If the gerut is not anything, and the child is ayiv al kol hamitzvah, child is not Jewish. Shabbat doesn't play a role. Kashrut doesn't play a role. Tarat Mishpacha doesn't play a role. So I'm saving the kid from sinning. And then he adds on, he quotes the Igrot Moshe to Rabbi Menashe Klein. The Igrot Moshe has a more lenient attitude. That is a slut, we'll see. Kid should be Jewish. Could be you can convert. Nevertheless, the young man says to Reb Menashe Klein that many differ with the Igrot Moshe, the Yesh Chokim. Okay. And this whole question, is it a schut? Isn't it a schut? And Reb Menashe Klein here in this first paragraph raises the heart of the problem that gives us such an amorphous concept of Geirut. What is Geirut about? And he quotes the Gemara that I've quoted to you many times, Shabbat Samachet Amid Aleph Hamitgayer Bein Ha'akam. Someone converts among the non-Jews and doesn't know there's a concept of Shabbat. And Tosfos explains that it was a proper conversion and it was in front of three Dayanim. V'lo hodiu mitzvah Shabbat. and they never told him about Shabbat. Or like I dramatized it, I said they gave him a book, studied the book, and 39 pages on Shabbos, the Malacha, the Oraita, those 39 pages were ripped out, were missing. And Reb Menashe Klein says, we see that the Geirut is Chal. We see that the Geirut, all the Gemara is concerned with, how many Kabanot Chatat he has to bring when he learns about Shabbat. But we see that the Geirut is Chal. On the other hand, the Gemara in Bukhorat, Taflamid, that we cited so many times, that if Bishat Geirut, the person says, I'm not makabel the whole Torah. This particular little halacha doesn't make sense to me. I don't want to observe it. Geirut is not chal. So what's happening here? Is there a Geirut? Isn't there a Geirut? Is there schut? Do we bring him to convert, and even though the kid is going to have a background where he won't be taught religion, what's going on here? How do we approach it? What's good for the kid? What isn't good for the kid? Okay. Now, Rabbi Asher Klein says very positively and very correctly that all these Gemaras are correct. The Gemara in Shabbos, where a kid doesn't know about Shabbat. So you see, when the kid converts, what is he saying in reality? He's saying, I want to observe everything that Judaism is. He's not saying, I'm leaving out anything. He didn't know about Shabbat. All right, the textbook was faulty. But when he learns about Shabbat, he will observe 100%. In the Gemara in Bukhorat, what are you saying in reality? That someone converts and says, yes, I was taught everything. I had wonderful teachers. But there's one concept I can't accept. There where he says openly there's one concept I can't accept, the Geirut is not Chal. So you see, that's the way Reb Menashe Klein resolves the contradiction. Now, you want to ask something? Yes?
What happens in the middle case? If someone intellectually understands and accepts it, but personally has a Yitzhara or it doesn't mean it's very hard for him to do it.
So,
and he says, I can't do it.
So, 1 second. What does it mean, a schut for a little kid to convert? Is there a schut or isn't there a schut? Could very well be that to convert is fabulous. You become a Jew, you get Kedushat Yisrael. You may sin occasionally. So number one, you're not any different than all the other Jews. What's the halacha in relation to Jews, Bizman Hazeh? How are we Matias Stam Yainim? They touch it, they pour it, they drink it, and we're Matias. What do we say? Tinochet Shenishba'u. That kid who converts, he has Kedushat Yisrael. He's a Tinok Shenishba. And maybe he's much better off being a Jew than being a non-Jew. He has the schut of what he does do. He doesn't eat chametz on Pesach. He lights Hanukkah candles. Chabad got hold of her. She lights Shabbos candles. The total picture is not perfect, but not any different than Netanyahu, not any different than Gantz, not any different than Lapid. The overall picture, it is a schut. They are Jewish. They do get schar. And I, you'll say,
a Rosh Merusha, a Mechayla Shabbos, a Neichlin Levet and Treifot, it's Bishogeg, it's Tinok Shenishpa, everything the Rambam says in Hilchot Mamrim, Perikimo, Halacha Aleph, Halacha Bet, look it all up. Wow. So you see, it's not an easy question to answer. Reb Moshe had a much more lenient attitude. Reb Menashe Klein is more towards a stringent attitude. But even Reb Menashe Klein sees both sides of the picture. And the way he his analysis of the two Gemarot is perfect. There's no other analysis. This is the analysis. And Enoch Inami, what Yomo West, person converts, it's not that, you see, the average person's attitude, I saw this in my own family, my cousins, my aunts, my uncles, like, it's a Catholic concept. Oh, you want to be a rabbi, you have to observe. But we're regular Jews, we don't have to observe so much. It's like a priest, like a nun. They have vows of chastity, obedience, etc., poverty. It's like the church. This is the way the average Jew thinks. We don't have to be so frum. Frumkeit is a choice. A rabbi has to be frum. We don't have to be totally. Whatever we do is wonderful. So you see, if you view it from that point of view, it's a schut. In addition, Reb Menashe Klein quotes the Gemara, pushes us the other way. Yevamot daf mem zayin omid bet. It's a Gemara that you all know. Koshim geirim li Yisrael kesapachat. That Jews are converted, non-Jews are bad for the Jews. It's like a scab, it's like a plague, it's like corona. We don't want to get corona. Why do we need... why do we need more non-Jews? Now, what is the pshat, Koshim Gerim Yisrael Kesapachat? I need not tell you this. Tosfos, it's either positive or negative. Negative, it simply means, look, most converts... let me tell you a story. I saw so much in my life. In my first congregation, again, I don't want to mention names. It's a family well integrated on the Israeli scene. A very famous Rebbetzin is from this family. The father was a non-Jew, was Jewish. The mother was a convert. So I was very close to this family. I was in the rabbinate at 61, 62, remained friendly with them. They came in Aliyah 69 when we did. He's no longer alive, and his widow is alive and well. La Richa German Taifim. So I once had a talk with her. I said, does it matter to you that you can't marry a Kohen? She's a Giyorit. And she's married. I mean, he's not a Kohen. He came from a very prominent Jewish family in Florida. Not from, but Jewish-minded, conservative temple, etc. There's a square in Miami Beach named after his father. His father was a councilman, was very active, right near the big temple. So I said, does it matter to you that you can't marry a Kohen? So she gave me an answer I can never forget. She said, no. She said, it's correct. And let me explain to you why. And she said, what does a Kohen represent? The Kohen represents spirituality, the spiritual person. The Rav, I have many talks from the Rav, I translated, where the Rav says, today every Jew is a Kohen, everyone. But at one time, the Kohen was the rabbi. A Kohen, v'alevi shebiyamim achem. He was the spiritual person. She said, what does it mean, a convert? Every convert, you ask them about their childhood. What do you remember? So I asked you about your childhood. What do you remember? You read the memoir literature of all these Jews who become famous. The Passover Seder, the whole family came together. The solemnity of Yom Kippur. This is what they remember. You ask a frum Jew, what do you remember? You ask, and unfortunately they'll tell you, getting drunk on Purim. It was fabulous. Ah, you know, terrific. drunk plays, what we put on, how we made fun of our rabbeim, you know, it's terrific. You ask someone who converted, what do you remember about your childhood? Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Day, the tree, the gifts on the tree. Now this person doesn't believe in anything. Christmas, a lot of baloney. Trinity, a lot of baloney. Jesus, a lot of baloney. She believes Shema Yisrael today. But there's still a good feeling of a happy childhood. A convert who has this feeling should not be allowed to marry a Kohen. No, Yoma, what do you say to that answer? I can tell you're a Baron Lichtenstein, Tova Lichtenstein. They were friendly with this couple. They were very, very impressed by that answer. It hit home.
Exactly.
This takes us into the very question about Shiva. How do you relate to your family? How do you relate? How do you explain to your children that the grandparents are Mechalalei Shabbos? These are real problems. And I want to tell you, I've never told the Baal Tshuva to cut off relations with his family. Just the opposite. Yechayv Kibud Avim, many Tshuva are written on this. But, so Kashin gave him the Yisrael Kesapachat. You can interpret it, why do we need people that still have a feeling for Christmas and Easter eggs and Easter bunnies, etc.? Why do we need this? Or no, Kushim Gerim Ki Yisrael Kesapachat, that's just the opposite. The average Jew, how from is he? He looks for a kula here, a kula there. He boasts he's modern Orthodox, not that, you know, he can be makhil in this, makhil in that. Here in Israel, they use the word tzioni dati, light. Light, they use the word in Hebrew, light. In other words, and then you take a look at a convert, she covers her hair down to hair. Now there's a new minhag in Eretz Israel, a new style, I will say. You see these people, prominent frum ladies, they wear like a big a stash in their hair. It's not, I don't know what you would call it, it's not a kerchief, but it's not a proper covering. It's like the first part of the hair, you see a kerchief on it. What would you call it?
A hairband.
Well, it's more than a hairband. It's white. I don't know. Maybe
it's a white band.
A white hairband. Good. Okay, if that term is correct. I always think of a hairband narrow. But what do we need the converts for? They make us look bad. And you know, it said further that it causes problems in heaven. Because in heaven they look down. Hey, you were born a Jew, you were raised a Jew, you went to Yeshiva Reb Tzichel Chan and you studied with great Rebbeim. And take a look how your observance is not proper. Look at that lady, look at that man, Gentiles, non-Jews, converted out of their own free will and volition. And they become tzaddikim yesodei olam. Live up to them. It creates problems for the Jews. See, you can take that Maimon Chazal, positive or negative. And he says too, you see, here too, it's either like the Gemara in Shabbat, be lenient, welcome them, or like the Gemara in Bechorot, what do we need them for? Are they going to be good? Are they going to be perfect? And even if they're perfect, they create problems for us. They bring down the midat hadin. Why aren't you Jews equal to these non-Jews who became Jewish? All right? It's a very delicate problem. And then the whole question of Skud, You observe mitzvot, you don't observe mitzvot. Can you observe mitzvot? Is it a schut? Do you have to be Jewish to get the schut? And he quotes a very famous Gemara, and this Gemara already becomes the source for the entire, one of the main sources for the entire question of teaching Jews Torah. But first, let me quote the Gemara. Baba Kama Daf Lamed Chet Aleph 38a Baba Kama. And the Gemara begins, it's right in the middle of the page. Omar Rav Yosef, and he quoted a pasuk from Habakkuk. Omad, let me see it properly. Omad vayimodeid eretz ra'ah vayatir goyim vayitpotsetsu hararei ad shachu givat olam halichet olam lo. And what is the pasuk saying? That God, he saw and released the nations of the world. What do you mean he released them from what? And the Gemara says he released them from observing the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. In other words, if you go to Trump and say to him, Mr. Trump, we very love you, you've done good things for Israel, but your lifestyle is offensive to us, your sexual behavior, and Trump will say right away, quotes the Gemara. What do you mean? My sexual behavior is not good? I don't have to worry. One of the Sheva Mitzvot is proper sexual behavior. He'll quote the Gemara to you. God released us from having to observe the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. And so then the Gemara says, Shlomo, this is makes you happy. Trump is telling you, quoting a Gemara in Baba Kama, that God released him. You know what that means? Chaytaniska. Because he plays around with so many different... You go to Clinton. Clinton, what's with you? Here, you claim you're a good ethical man. The Rabbi Ganak of the OU is your bosom buddy. You wrote a book together, etc. And Clinton says, what's wrong with my playing around? What's wrong with my getting flowers from Jennifer every Friday? I don't have to observe an open Gemara. Rabbi Ganek showed it to me. Nu chayta niska. Because they live like this, we're going to say, you're wonderful, you're good, you don't have to observe. God released you, the Sheva Mitzvah. So the Gemara asked this. And the Gemara answers, Shafilu Makayamim Otan Ein Makablim Scha. That even if they're Makayim, it's not that they're released, but the idea is that even if they're Makablim, even if they're observant, they don't get Scha. It's a fabulous Gemara. So then the Gemara asks, what do you mean they don't get scha? They quote the Mishnah, the whole sugya of who gets, who is, do you say, who is equal to a Kohen Gadol? And the Gemara says, and it's actually a Mishnah, that a non-Jew, Shafilu Nachri, Be'osek B'Torah, Shehu Kekohen Gadol, that a non-Jew who knows Torah, he's more than a Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol Amorah, it's a garnished. A William Fulbright, Professor Fulbright. There were others, Professor Travis, Hereford Travis. These were Jews who knew Shas, non-Jews who knew Shas. And the Gemara says they're better than a Kohen Gadol. What do you mean they don't get scha? Equal to a Kohen Gadol. What do you mean they don't get scha? Look how the Gemara's machshiva them. And the Gemara answers, Ein makamblim scha kimetsuva viosa eine kimetsu eine she. Eina mitzuva va'osef.
And it's a very important answer from the Gemara. It's a psychologist can deal with this Gemara for a half a year of lectures. But what the Gemara is saying, that the greatest schar in the world is when you're commanded. Because when you're commanded, look into the Mefarshim, you have the Yetzer Hara. Shlomo slept very soundly during the night. He was very busy. The alarm went off at 6:30. He said, there'll be a minyan at 8 o'clock. It's Rosh Chodesh. Why do I have to get up so early? The Yetzer Hara gets the best of you. But someone who's not mitzvah, someone's visiting Israel, non-Jewish, they heard that Rosh Chodesh at the Kotel is very special. They set the alarm for 6:30, headed to the Kotel, saw the davening, no Yetzer Hara, Gadol HaMetzuvah V'Yosa, takes greater energy, greater courage, smack down that Yetzer Hara. So that's what the Gemara says, that the Sheva Mitzvot until now, you did and you were Einu, you were mitzvah v'osa, a guy got schar like a Jew observing Shabbos. You're mitzvah to observe Shabbos. You're mitzvah to davening. Now God got good and disgusted. They're not observing. They don't care. They're progressives, or what Rakefe calls retrogressives, etc. So now they're just Einu mitzvah v'osa, all right, they do it. It's not that they're commanded. They have no Yetzer Hara fighting them. All right, they're tourists in Israel. They wanted to see what went on at the Kotel, so they do get a bit of schar. So this is the first part of the Gemara, a very, very powerful Gemara. And again, it raises the whole issue. Is it a schut to convert? Isn't it a schut to convert? Where are you better off? Are you better off Einu mitzvah v'yosa or mitzvah v'yosa? Where is there more schar? Do we have the right to take a non-Jewish kid, throw him into a mikveh, do a brit milah, throw him into a mikveh, and say, it's a schut for you, it's wonderful, one day you'll thank us for converting you. Parents are religious, no question it's a schut. Parents are irreligious, chinuch mamlachti, not mamlachti dati, public school, not day school. What kind of schut, what kind of schar? Right, let me just go one step further. And then the Gemara tells a very interesting story, that the Roman government wanted to find out what the Jews really think. And they sent Shalcha Malchut Romei Shnei Siratiyotot, means two officers. I spoke about my grandson, Katsin, going up to captain this week, being honored as the Katsin Mitztayein. All right. Two officers. Go, two bright people. Generally speaking, you don't become an officer if you're a dummy. These two non-Jewish officers go and study Torah, find out what the Jews think, find out what their religion is about, and report back to us. And these two officers come, they study with a guy named Lakefet, with Rav David Miller, with Asaf Bednash, and when their study is all over, they say to the Rabbanim, well, you have a terrific system, terrific knowledge. We learned so much, it was wonderful, but we have one tremendous complaint against you. And of course, Shoshe Nogach, you knock up a non-Jewish animal, don't have to pay. Non-Jewish animal knocks you up, you have to pay. You can talk about Ribbit. I mean, you can give it a few examples. Ribbit, I don't have to tell you what goes on in Bab Metzia. Dafka, take Ribbit from a non-Jew, and a Jew you're not allowed to give, not allowed to take, not allowed to offer. Wait a minute, what do you have against non-Jews? But the two officers say,
we're not going to tell the Roman authorities. I'm not going to squeal on you, because the overall picture was wonderful, was good. Now, this Gemara, you can understand? Yomo, how are you allowed to teach Goyim Gemara? How are you allowed to teach Goyim Shas? It's an open Gemara. They came, they studied, they were accepted. They came into the Beis Medrash. They didn't study on their own. How are you allowed?
Okay,
and could be, we'll see. So you see, this Gemara opens the whole Pandora box. Is it a schut? Isn't it a schut? Is it better l'kayim mitzvot, not be Jewish, and live an ethical, moral life? Live with the seven mitzvot. Or no, better to be Jewish and have to be mitzvah v'yoseh, even though it's not the same schar. Mitzvah v'sheino says not the same schar, but mitzvah v'yoseh, you overcome the yetzer hara better. How do you teach? What do you do? Goyim, day school, children, mother not Jewish, two officers, come study. Okay. This is the Gemara that opens the Pandora's box. Now, I want to tell you, the answer to the non-Jewish officers, the answer would be very simple. These are the rules that you live with. And if you would change your laws, that if your animal damages a Jewish animal and you pay the Jews kedat v'kedin, we would institute a takana, we have to pay you kedat v'kedin. With Ribbit, I want to see you go to a bank and tell the bank, a non-Jewish bank, tell them you're Jewish, you can't take interest, you can't pay interest, give me a loan without interest. You'd get nowhere. So we say to them, just like you take interest, we take interest from non-Jews. But with Jews, when they lend us money, it's a gemach, it's a gemilat chesed, there's no interest. Therefore, we are... lend them money without interest. It's reciprocity, gomlim. But all right, the answer is not important. What is important is that they taught non-Jews Torah. Okay, we'll come back to this next week. Now, Mark, I'm telling you in advance, what we're going to hit upon, meyinyan l'anyan b'yoto inyan, it was worth your whole trip to Israel this year. Because Chicago is going to hit you over the head. And the source I'm going to show you is an enigmatic source. I don't know if there are more than three or four people in the world who know where to get it. I don't even know if you can still get it. I think it was posted and removed. But wait till you see what we have. And when you go back to Chicago, you're going to have to watch your P's and Q's, because if you talk too much in certain circles, you will be in trouble. So to reiterate, all right, what have we done today? All right, first of all, we finished out BMT and that lecture, the two questions that I was asked. Secondly, we finished Toin to Giyoret, and you see that the Rav, Rav Moshe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, all took the same position. Halacha l'maisa, I can only tell you what I've seen in life. And again, I repeat, if they know the melamed l'hoil, you're going to get nowhere trying l'hachmir. If they don't know the melamed l'hoil, don't show it to them. Show them the Rav and Rav Moshe better. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam she'akol nieh b'dvaro. But this next shayla, minyan l'yinen ve'oto shayla, is the heart of the problem today. What do you do with all these kids from homes where there's no Shabbat, no Kashrut, no Chinuch Torani, and the Ukrainians and the Russians want the kids converted? What do you do when Shlomo goes on shlichut to the world for 3 years, and he's teaching in a day school, and there are 18 kids in the day school who are not halachically Jewish? Are you allowed to teach them or not? You'll see. Is it a schud? Is it a schud? All right, I have to tell you, there's no black and white answer here. And you're going to see, Reb Menashe Klein is inclined to be machmir. Reb Moshe is mekel. No black and white answer. You go back and forth. We don't have a simple solution. Now, I just want to tell you, tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, I'll start the class by trying to put my head back on. As I told you, I received, not simple, to receive in the mail and then to try to answer. You don't know how I found the mailbox. It's one of those stories that Yomo specializes in, of Hashkacha Pratit. That was unbelievable. And that's why I mailed them an answer that I'll talk about it in class. But I'll begin the class by dealing. Did Rakefet say that reforming conservatives should be locked up and not allowed near the Kotel? Did he say that? That's what I'm accused of. And they're quoting me and hitting me over the head. Tomorrow I will explain myself black and white. And I challenge anyone to prove me wrong. Okay? I challenge anyone. But tomorrow. Another problem that came my way that I just want to answer with one drop of sauce. Someone just bought an apartment in Yerushalayim. They're evidently not coming to live here. It's an apartment they have when the going gets bad in America. They'll jump over here. Or maybe Shlomo will pick up their grandson, their son, for Machon Lev, and they'll have a son already living here doing army, and the process will begin. So now the question is, these people are going to come occasionally, one day or two days. Halacha l'maisa, I paskin as follows. You all know I gave shurman this a year and a half, for 2 years, many years ago. And I stand on those shurim. I have not uncovered anything which leads me to change one iota. Halacha l'maisa, if you're here for three regalim, it's one day yontif, late mandapalik, all the poskim agree. If you're not here for three times a year, but you're here occasionally, you'll be here Pesach, maybe Shavuot, etc. Observe one day, and if you're a tzaddik, don't do malacha d'oraita the second day. That's essentially the psak of a day and a half l'chumrah. That psak is based upon my clear understanding that Israel, although the Mechaber, we're going against the Mechaber, and I gave hours of shurim in the Kollel, how dare we paskin against the Mechaber. Even though we're going against the Mechaber, Israel, the concept of Yontif Sheni is where your feet are. It's like Megillah. If you're in America, it's 2 days no matter where you're from. When Rakafet was in America, South Africa, or Australia for Yontif Sheni, he observed two complete days. If you're in Israel, it's one day. But out of covet, and what I'm telling you is exactly what the Rav told me in 1978. Discussed the problem with him in great detail. Out of covet for the Shulchan Aruch, if you don't want to do Malacha D'oraita the second day, fine. If you're visiting Israel, I would not alter the Pesach. In other words, even if you don't have property here, one day, the second day, no malacha d'oraita. And there I end off with the story of what happened to me back in 1969. Rivka Duka, the daughter of Professor Abe Duka, was one of the three professors on my doctorate committee. Abe Duka's daughter, we were working in the encyclopedia together. She's a frum girl, a frum lady. She should live and be well. She was not married yet. And she asked me, she said, you know, Rebbe, my aunt is coming. And she's staying, I still remember the hotel, the Bat Sheva, then was a regular hotel on Rehov King George. What should she observe? So I told her, one day and the second day not to do Malacha D'oraita. After Sukkot, I say to her, how did it work out with your aunt? Oh, I'm afraid to tell you. My aunt walked out of the hotel. She saw Hasidim getting on a bus on Chalamaya. She said, what? Hasidim can go on a bus?
The second day,
yeah. Chalamai, first day Chalamai.
Oh.
Second day, it's first day Chalamai. He said, if they can go on a bus, why can't I? So my whole psak went out the door. But if you're a Lamban, you can understand what I'm saying. Are there any questions from this erudite audience in front of me? Okay. Until we meet again tomorrow morning, I wouldn't miss tomorrow's shiur for all the bullets that are being fired in the Ukraine today. Yes, yes, Yolo.
Just to follow up and make clear, the story of the Rebbe, the psak, what the Rebbe wrote about the Dioris.
Yeah.
Did he mean that Hasera means her gears is batal, is not valid?
No, he probably meant lachatila, you can't convert. You can't. You can't convert. But you can't say that the gears, see, it's so amorphous. It's impossible. I've discussed this with the Rav. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. Impossible to pass a lot of Geirat if the form was done properly. Okay. Das Vedanya. Open it up to the world.
Should be open.
It's open. Does anyone have a question from the erudite audience looking at me on the screen?
Hey, Rebbe.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Rebbe.
How are your parents? Nachum, how are your parents?
Rebbe?
How are your parents? You don't hear? He can't hear me? How are your parents? I'm asking
Baruch
you.
Hashem, they're, hopefully they'll be here at the end of the week.
Oh, fabulous. Okay, that's good news.
With Corona and everything. No, I just want you to know that it's going on right now. My sister-in-law's father-in-law, Reuven Katz, he's the son of Nechemia Katz, passed away.
Who passed away?
Who? Reuven Katz. His father was Nechemia Katz.
Right.
Benito.
Right.
Right. So he was a judge.
He was a nephew of Reb Moshe Feinstein.
Right. So he's my brother-in-law's father-in-law. So they're having the funeral now. He passed away on Friday.
There's so many people being buried here in Israel. If I were to be a good Jew, I'd have to live in the cemetery. I'm telling you plain and simple. There's a Talmid of mine. I'll talk about it the minute I get more details. I'll dedicate a shiur in her memory. And from what I understand, they have plans, from what I gather, it's being done privately. They're reburying the lambs here, husband and wife. And it's being done quietly, and that's very good.
He made Aliyah a couple of years ago, actually.
I'm talking about a different family. I'm talking about people who have the same name as you.
Yeah.
And I'm told
that hit home a bit today, Rebbe. The shirt today. You know what I'm talking about.
And I can tell you that they have already quite a few grandchildren living here. Kanai and Hara. So Israel is winning out, but we have real problems. That murder on Shabbos and Ariel, how he threw himself on top of his girlfriend, saved her life, and the murderers continue. We catch them all, and it just goes on. Maybe we should execute them. I don't know what to say, but these Arabs... Execution doesn't bother them. They go to Olam Haba. How many virgins do they have? There's a whole 18 virgins or something. How many?
I'm sure 72, depending on the case.
Hey, 72? God, you got to be a very strong man to handle that. Kanain Hara. God have mercy on us. We should have more soldiers and more guards and more Mishmaha Gvul. What a story.
Katz, Reb Moshe's brother-in-law, who got Reb Moshe the visa to come to America.
Right.
When he left Toledo, he moved to Kew Gardens, I think. And then when his wife was ill, they moved to an assisted living to an adult home in Sheepshead Bay. And someone from my parents' shul used to pick him up every day to go to Minyan.
Wow.
And I got to know him. Once when we were driving to Chicago, he gave me the contact in Toledo to stop over for a minute on the way.
Wow. He saved Reb Moshe. That's absolutely true. Reb Nechemya Katz was congressman that he knew, and they saved Reb Moshe's family in 1937.
Yes? It's in Reb Moshe's biography.
Right. No, I know it from the family. I know it from living testimony.
his great-grandson, Nechemia, is in Hester now.
Kala Kavod. Nechemia, named after him, is in Hester. Kala Kavod. All right, I have to tell you, Mark Wiener, Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel, with all these wonderful titles, came back from America and he brought me many gifts. But among the gifts, he brought me two masmids from my time in yeshiva. One was 56 and one was 57 or 58, two masmids. And I went through them on Shabbos. And I was very moved because I always talk about the little buildings that the American government built for yeshiva, GI right, Bill of Rights. And they built buildings that GIs would come back to school, to graduate school. And in that little building was the Bernard Gray Rebel Graduate School. And the other side of the little building was the Kollel that Dr. Belkin established for the survivors from Shanghai until they Americanized and found jobs. And it really was beautiful to see that building and to know that my memory is correct, because today it's a big, beautiful Gottesman Library building, state of the art. But at one time there were little shacks on Amsterdam Avenue. Rabbi Reuben, do you remember those buildings, wooden buildings? Rabbi Reuben confirms what I'm saying. Okay, I want to thank everyone for joining in and joining with me. And we should only have Besorah Tova to Leim about Kol Yisrael until we meet again in health and happiness. Das V'danya. Thank you very much for honoring me with your presence. And Mark Licht, how did you get here? I thought today you weren't going to be able to make the shiur. Kol Hakavod that you showed up. Kol Tov Selah. Das V'danya.
I'm half awake anyway.
Kol Hakavod. Vic, are you smiling?
2.5 hours.
Vic Snow.
Yes.
Are you smiling?
Yeah, Rebbe.
Okay, good.
Rebbe, what?
Are you smiling?
Yeah, I'm trying.
Trying, okay. Keep it up.
I need
smiles because I'm getting news on all sides. That doesn't make me happy. Okay.
Trying.